Okay, let's begin with some meditation. I think everybody here is a fairly experienced meditator by now. As always, we begin by checking our posture. Start with the back. It's a little bit straighter than we normally sit. Not rigid, but a little bit more erect. Our head is straight on our shoulders, maybe just a couple degrees in front of the vertical, but not tilted to one side or the other. Our eyes are either just slightly open or very lightly closed. Our mouth is lightly closed, not clenched. Our tongue is on the ridge of our upper gums above the teeth, right at the front of the heart of the palate. Our shoulders are down and a little bit back, so our chest is opened up. We're not hunched forward, but a little bit opened up. Our upper arms are away from our trunk. Our right hand is on our left with our thumbs touching, slightly below the level of the navel. And our legs are in a position that we find comfortable and stable. The goal is not to be in pain, but to set a posture that's stable and that we can maintain effortlessly during the meditation. So check and see if you can identify any sources of tension now and address them. Wiggle them out or stretch a little bit or move things around. And we begin by taking three deep breaths from the abdomen with the stomach expanding on the in-breath so our diaphragm is pulled down. And then our stomach coming back towards our spine on the exhalation. And now we allow our breathing to return to its normal pattern. And we take a moment to set our motivation for the meditation to follow, and then for the discussion afterwards. And as much as possible, we generate the bodhicitta motivation, the thought that we're doing this meditation so that we can develop and train our mind so that we can be of greater benefit to all living beings. That way of thinking usually doesn't come naturally to us, but even if we can effortfully generate it, it's said to be like rocket fuel for our meditation practice. And having set our motivation, we now begin the actual meditation. We're just going to do a little bit of simple breathing meditation. We place our mind, or our consciousness, or our awareness on the breath. The physical sensation of breath moving in and out through the nostrils. That's all. Mind directly perceiving breath. And every time we notice our mind has wandered away, is thinking about something that happened today, or something we need to do tomorrow, or hears a sound out on the road, we just set that thought aside and come back to the breath over and over and over again, training the mind to stay on the chosen object, in this case, the breath. And we can end our meditation with a dedication, acknowledging that we've done something positive. We've worked with our mind in a way that will benefit both ourselves and others. And we dedicate that positive energy to the benefit of everyone. We don't hold on to it for ourselves, but gladly share it. You can relax your concentration. Anyone have any question about that meditation? I think most people are familiar with it by now. Like I say, I've never led this module before, and I've always wondered what in the world, how you could talk about this subject for 4 to 6 weeks. I mean, you can define samsara and you can define nirvana. That takes about 5 minutes. And how can you pad it into a full module? But when I actually looked at the material, it ties a lot of things together in a very interesting way. And it's going to, the main subject is something that I have never really been real solid on myself. So I'm glad for the opportunity to work with this. Just to get a few definitions out of the way. What is samsara? Anybody want to take a stab at that? It implies suffering, okay. It's the cycle of rebirth. Yeah, you're getting most of the main points. Samsara is the uncontrolled or forced cycle of recurring suffering, birth, life, and death. Being reborn over and over again without wishing to be so, without choosing. It's forced on us. How many people chose to have the body they have? Anybody remember getting to say, oh, I want that body over there, or I want that one there? Who remembers choosing the mind? Excuse me, I got a tickle in my throat this evening. I apologize. Who remembers choosing their mind? Oh, I want that mind, I want that body. That'll make a nice life. No, it doesn't work that way. It's forced on us. How is it forced on us? By our karma. Okay, by our past actions of body, speech, and mind. So samsara is that cycle of being born, living, growing old, dying, and then being forcibly reborn again, over and over and over again, without any choice or volition to it. Okay, it implies being reborn into a life that in many ways is suffering. We'll talk about that more in a minute. So that's samsara. That's where we are now. What's nirvana? Wisdom gets us there, okay? Nirvana is the state of complete freedom from suffering. Complete. Permanent freedom from suffering. The end of personal suffering. You no longer suffer physically or mentally in any way. Another term that's used for that is liberation. Okay? Is that the same thing as enlightenment or Buddhahood? No, it's not. Nirvana is not enlightenment. Nirvana is personal freedom from suffering. What's enlightenment? What's the difference? Okay, you no longer suffer if you're in nirvana. Nirvana being a mental state, not a place that you go to. Okay? A Buddha is that plus compassion. Yeah, complete compassion. Okay? The wish that others be similarly freed from suffering. Okay, so you've got the wisdom aspect, which is personal freedom, leads to personal freedom from suffering. And then you develop the complete compassion side, the bodhicitta side, the wish that others be similarly free of suffering. So it's a combination of those two that makes enlightenment. What is someone who achieves a state of nirvana, which again is a mental state, it's not a place, it's not a rock band in Buddhism, and samsara is not a perfume. Interesting how all these terms get transformed. Yeah, perfume named samsara. Yeah. Well, once you know what it means, it's not too appealing. What's a person who achieves nirvana called? Anybody know? An arhat. A-R-H-A-T. Okay. So just some general terms that we'll be using. As always in Buddhism, we're going to talk about the gloomy stuff first and primarily. So most of this course is going to be focused on samsara. We're not going to talk a whole lot about nirvana, but nirvana is just the getting out of samsara. And samsara, you can say, really is a mental state too. The main format for the course, so we won't get into it tonight, the next 3 weeks we're going to be talking primarily about something called the 12 links of dependent origination. Is anybody familiar with that? Anybody heard anything about it? What? Kind of, okay. I would encourage you, if you don't have liberation in the palm of your hand, look it up on the web. You can find an image of it. It's a circular drawing. There are 12 stages. It's called the 12 links of dependent origination. And I'll just read them out. You don't need to write them down because we're not going to get into them so much tonight. But at the top, there's always an image of an old man who can't see wandering around, and that represents ignorance. And then that leads to comfort. Then the next ones are, we will talk about these in the next few weeks, compositional factors, consciousness, name and form, six senses, contact, feeling, craving, grasping, becoming, rebirth, aging and death, and then you're back to ignorance. And this is a cycle, and this explains why what keeps us in samsara. Okay, if we go forward in this way, clockwise, that explains the sequence that we go through that has us reborn over and over into a suffering life, okay? Starting from ignorance always, okay? That leads to the next one, leads to the next one. And His Holiness the Dalai Lama always, when he talks about this, he always says, if you want to figure out how to get out of samsara, okay, this is what keeps us in. If you want to figure out how to get out, you go back the other way. If you don't want ignorance, you have to eliminate the previous one, which is aging and death. If you want to eliminate aging and death, you have to eliminate rebirth. If you want to eliminate rebirth, you have to eliminate becoming. Okay, so this way, and we'll talk about both these interpretations in the next few weeks. This going around this way is why we stay in samsara. Going around this way is how to get out of samsara. Okay, so the 12 links of dependent origination. If you don't have this or another textbook in it, try and look it up on the web, and I'll try and find a good version and print it out next week. I thought we had one here at the center. We used to. I'm not sure where it's wandered off to, because this is considered such an important teaching. It's typically is it on the tanka there? Oh, okay. If you look to the left of the door as you go outside, Chris will be standing there. Like Carol Merrill pointed, yeah, it's considered so important. It's always put outside the door of a temple or a gompa, both in the Hinayana and in the Mahayana traditions. This is a teaching that's common to both traditions. Very, very important. Okay, so we'll really get into the details of that next week, because that's something that I've never understood that well. So by leading this class, I'm going to have to up my game a little bit. So before we get into that, I wanted to talk about what's the most basic structure of all the Buddha's teachings that we talk about. Anybody want to take a stab at that? What's basic Buddhism? What would you say? The Four Noble Truths, okay. Yeah, the Four Noble Truths. This really includes all the teachings of the Buddha in a very concise form. Why are they called Noble Truths? The correct name for them is they're truth for a noble being. And the Sanskrit word for a noble being is an arya, A-R-Y-A, which is not the same as an arhat. Okay, those are two words. It's very easy to get confused. An arhat is? Yeah, someone who's reached nirvana. An arya is a noble being, which means someone who looks deeply into things and sees them for what they really are. It's a very much sort of vaguer term, but it doesn't have a specific definition like arhat is. So these are truths for a noble being, for someone who's willing to look at their experience deeply and honestly. They may not seem true to a more superficial person, but the Buddha says they are truth for a noble being. Okay? So I wanted to... These have a lot to do with samsara, so I wanted to review them. And, okay, so we'll do the truth for a noble being, okay, for an arya, we'll use that word. Okay, and the first one is suffering, or the way they say it, true suffering, or the way it is, sometimes you see it on bumper stickers as life sucks. Or something like that, but life is difficult. Life is problematic. Life is unsatisfactory. But it's called true suffering. There are three levels of suffering that we can find if we're willing to look at our experience honestly. The first one is?
Suffering of shame?
No, that's number two, okay? The first one is referred to as the suffering of suffering. Suffering succotash. The suffering of suffering. And that's the kind that we can all see. We don't have to be a noble being to see that. Physical pain, losing a loved one, the obvious gross suffering. We all accept that, okay? Suffering being a mental phenomena. Pain is a physical phenomena. Suffering is the mind that reacts to pain in that way. Second one is the suffering of change. Second level, this is less obvious, but still pretty easy to see. Kim, you want to define that for us? Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So basically, even pleasurable experiences, experiences that we would not initially label as pain or loss or deprivation, become or change into suffering. Okay, there is no experience that we have in this existence that I don't think we've come across that is so inherently pleasurable that repeated ad infinitum, it becomes a source of happiness. There is no food, delicious food that we can keep eating that continually is pleasurable. Okay, there is no experience that repeated over and over and over again stays pleasurable. Suffering of change. Okay, not too profound. We can all see that. And that's not really an idea that's unique to Buddhism. We find that in other religions also. The third level, anybody know what that one is? Yeah, I'll call it the suffering of pervasiveness. Yeah, suffering of pervasiveness. And this one is definitely a little bit harder to see, okay? And this is really what samsara is, okay? This forced rebirth where we have the aggregates, which basically means the body and mind, that experience these other two types of suffering. Okay, we have a body and a mind that will inevitably experience these other types of suffering. And it is forced on us. And we are in that cycle over and over. So just by having a body and mind, a human body and mind, an animal body and mind, whatever, of this type, we will inevitably experience suffering. Okay? It's forced on us by our karma. It's not something that we choose. Okay, that's what we mean by the third type of suffering. And this is the most difficult to see and the most profound. Any questions or comments so far? Yeah. This is the first one is obvious pain, okay? Physical pain, emotional pain. This one is more pervasive in that just by having a body and mind like this, we'll inevitably experience this type of suffering and this type of suffering. Okay, it's forced upon us. We have no choice. Okay? So that's the first noble truth, first truth for a noble being. Second noble truth is, yeah, we'll refer to it as the true cause. There is a cause for this suffering. It's not something that just happens, okay? What is the cause of suffering? Karma, they usually say there are two causes, but I'm going to tell you. Karma being one of them, the results of past actions, and the other being, mental delusions, okay? But I'm going to simplify it saying it's the cause of suffering is our misperception of reality, of not seeing how things exist. Okay? We think that we exist, that Susie exists, that Kim exists, that this chair exists, that Kadampa Center exists, that my emotions exist. We think they exist in a way which is actually impossible for them to exist. We hallucinate how things exist, and we believe in our hallucinations. Okay? We don't see how things really exist. And that is the root cause of all our suffering. Okay? By misperceiving reality. Okay? We think we exist and every other phenomena exists in a way which is impossible. The way we think they exist is impossible. We think they exist as permanent, independent phenomena when they really exist as impermanent, interdependent. But we don't see that. We see them as permanent and independent, and we believe that hallucination. And that's the source of our suffering. And that's why in the 12 links, right at the top, is old Mr. Ignorance, okay? Ignorance referring to not seeing things as they are, okay? So ignorance is the, you know, it's a circle, so there's no real starting point, but when we explain it, we start with ignorance, okay? If that's what keeps us in samsara. If we want to get out of samsara, the first thing we have to do is get rid of ignorance. Okay? Eliminate ignorance from our mind stream. And it is ignorance that keeps us in the cycle of samsara. Okay? So the true cause, you can't say karma, mental afflictions, mental delusions, but ignorance is really the, ignorance causes is what causes us to create negative karma and causes the other delusions. Yeah. Okay, so that's the second truth for an Arya being. The third one. What's the true one? The third one. Mm-hmm, yeah. So cessation, there is a true cessation of suffering. And this is a fairly extreme. Okay, up into here it's just doom and gloom. It's just, you're bummed out. Life is suffering, and I'm going to be reborn over and over, and I'm going to keep on suffering, and it doesn't seem like any way out. The Buddha said there is a cessation. There can be a cessation to suffering. And by cessation, we mean it ends, never to recur again. That's nirvana, okay? Once you reach nirvana, you don't fall back and start suffering again. It's not like you can fall off the tightrope. When you reach the nirvana, that's a permanent condition in that it's unchanging and that you do not start suffering again. So there can be a true cessation to all our suffering. Not we can learn to cope with it better, or we can learn how to deal with it, or, you know, accept it, you know, which is kind of the idea most of us have. You know, I've got my problems, I've got my pain, I'll try and cope with it as best as I can. Way beyond that. Eliminate it completely. And this is interesting. His Holiness the Dalai Lama, I heard him at one teaching saying, for those of us who've been practicing Buddhism for a while, and we don't, you know, it just seems impossible to get there. He said, if before you were a Buddhist and you were suffering 24 hours a day, and after 15 years, you're suffering 23 hours and 59 minutes a day, that you've done that proves or implies that you can completely eliminate suffering. You just continue the process. You just have to work at it a little bit longer. But the fact that we can even get rid of some suffering implies that we can get rid of it all. I don't know if you could say it actually proves it, but it certainly implies that. Okay, the true cessation. And what's the last noble truth for a noble being? The path, the true path. Okay, great. And there are lots of paths. They talk about the Eightfold Path in particular as one, but we're doing right here. We're going to say the path is it's a state of mind in which we see reality as it is, okay, in which we've eliminated ignorance. I mean, there's all sorts of different paths, right livelihood thing, but this we're going to talk is about having a correct view of reality. For the purpose of the discussion in this course, the path is to eliminate ignorance, to see how the things that we think exist are actually impossible. Okay, first we have to stop believing in them, even though we may still see them, and then we stop seeing them completely. Okay, we're imagining things that are impossible to exist, and we believe in them. That's the source of our problems. So the first thing is we have to stop believing in them, and then we have to not even see them anymore. And that may be very confusing, but we'll get into that more in the next couple of weeks. And according to this one text that I read, the best way to develop that mind is to meditate on the 12 links. Okay? Again, like I say, going clockwise, why we are stuck in samsara, going counterclockwise, how we get ourselves out of samsara. Okay? Okay. Any questions or comments about the Four Noble Truths? Yeah. Okay. We're doing a lot of definitions tonight, and then the next 3 weeks we'll be able to move forward a little bit faster. Another list. Three poisonous attitudes or mind. Anybody know what they are? also referred to as the three root delusions. Okay, yeah, what's the first one? That's the third one, okay. Attachment, okay. Craving, greed, okay. Second one is anger. And the third one is ignorance. We've talked about some. When we talk about ignorance, we're talking specifically about ignorance of cause and effect, or karma, about how that works in our life, and ignorance about how things exist. Those are really the two main types of ignorance. Ignorance of cause and effect and ignorance of how things exist. Okay? We can work with these attachment and anger. We can work on diminishing them. We have a lot of teachings on thought transformation. But the real way to eliminate these from our mind stream is by eliminating ignorance. Okay? And to eliminate ignorance, again, the text says we meditate on the 12 links. If we eliminate ignorance, attachment and anger disappear along with us, along with it. Okay, so this is kind of a let's see. Okay, so that's just, yeah, I think that's all I have to say about that. Another thing is holiness says a lot when he teaches is that we all want to be happy. That's something that's common to all living beings. They want to be happy. They want to be free of suffering. And that's what, it's interesting, a lot of Buddhism explains things, but they don't really explain why we all want to be happy. That's just kind of a given. But we all want to be happy. We all want not to suffer. Okay, so what's the term that we use for wanting to be free of samsara, free of cyclic existence? There's a term. What's that? Does anybody know what that is? Renunciation, yeah, okay. You'll hear this term a lot, renunciation. And specifically what we're renouncing is samsara, forced cyclic existence, unchosen, forced upon us by our karma. We're renunciation of samsara, okay? And we're not just renouncing the suffering of suffering, or the suffering of change. We're renouncing the uncontrolled, recurring life, okay, or rebirth. That's what we're renouncing, that forced, uncontrolled rebirth. We're saying, I don't want this anymore. I want liberation. I want to be free of suffering. I want to achieve the state of nirvana. Okay? So, to really develop a sense of renunciation, there are two necessary components of that. Anybody know what they are? The first is that we have to be aware of our own suffering. Okay, that's why we meditate on suffering, not because we want to get depressed or because Buddhists are gloomy people sitting in caves contemplating their navels. We look at our own life and identify the suffering in it as a way of wanting to become free. If we're not aware of how much suffering we're experiencing, there's no wish to be free of it. And then the second quality that's necessary is we have to believe or have a sense that it is possible to be free of suffering. Okay? We have to know that we're suffering and we have to think it's possible to be free of suffering. And I would say, I don't know, I think a lot of us here, and I think I'm this way myself, a lot of time this doesn't seem possible to me. Yeah. Anybody want to take the other point of view? I mean, who thinks it's free to, I mean, who feels instinctively that it's possible to be completely free of suffering? Anybody have a strong sense of that? I mean, sometimes when I see the great, that's some of the advantages of seeing people like the Dalai Lama or Lama Zopa. They give you a sense that there's another type of existence possible. But this is something I think we have to work on ourselves, because it's considered to be a wrong view to think that this is not possible. And that's why I say, you know, His Holiness says, if you notice just a little decrease in your suffering through your practice, that implies a much bigger decrease in your suffering is possible if you continue to practice. Okay? And again, it's said that by studying the 12 links, we start to convince ourselves that there is a way to end our suffering, that is an actual possibility, and we develop the strong sense of renunciation. It's said to be like you realize that your hair is on fire and you have to put it out right away. It has this sense of urgency. I am suffering and I cannot tolerate it any longer, and I know there's a bucket of water somewhere I can put the fire out with. Or it said, like, you're outside in a field during a tremendous hailstorm, and you know on the other side of the hill there's a barn that you can go to for shelter from the storm. Okay? You know that you're in the storm, and you know that there's a place of safety. That's what renunciation involves, okay? And that means going for refuge also. But renunciation is just, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. Yeah. Okay, and that's a very important quality to develop. That really speeds us along on our spiritual path. Okay, any comments? I've been talking a lot. Anybody, any comments or questions about what I've said so far? Yeah, Susie.
I do have a question.
Yeah. Do we have a hand mic?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that'd be good.
If this isn't something you want to cover, just let me know.
Mm-hmm.
But you had said nirvana, we had talked about nirvana and then enlightenment, and enlightenment is a Buddhahood.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And an enlightened being would be in nirvana and also have compassion.
Would have achieved personal liberation and would have developed bodhicitta specifically, but great compassion.
So if somebody has developed bodhicitta, would that fit in with the other types of the other vehicles? Hinayana Buddhism, for instance?
Hinayana, this is a good question. Hinayana or the Buddhism of Southeastern Asia typically does not emphasize compassion so much. They really emphasize personal liberation, and nirvana is the aspired to goal. In fact, a lot of the Hinayana traditions say enlightenment's just a fantasy. It's not really possible. Okay? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So that's... But I think, you know, it's really not as separate as it sounds, because as you become aware of your own suffering, you inevitably at some point start to realize that other people are suffering in the same way. And I think compassion starts to arise spontaneously. Now, we may find it on our spiritual path that it's more beneficial for us to work on personal liberation initially. Okay, and that's not selfish or anything, because the Buddha always said the best thing you can do for other people is to get your own act together. So if you, personal liberation, it's going to inevitably, I think, make you of better use to other people. You're not going to be hurting other people. You're not going to be creating negative karma, okay, because that would result in your own suffering also. So it's really, I think most people are going to find that they're working on both qualities simultaneously. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
then does the Hinayana tradition, can they be said to have enlightenment by that definition?
Well, I'm not an expert on Hinayana Buddhism. Somebody here may know more. My understanding is that in the Hinayana tradition, or some of them at least, when you attain the state of nirvana, that's kind of it. That's the end. And you kind of go out of existence to some degree or not. Don't quote me on this. I'm not an expert on Hinayana, okay? But from the Mahayana point of view, the tradition that we're in, which is Tibet, China, Japan, Sri Lankan, if you achieve the state of nirvana, you're inevitably going to still be seeing the suffering of others and be moved to do something about it and develop your compassion. So I think I'd be better to ask somebody who knows more about the Hinayana tradition.
It really isn't neither here nor there. I just wondered if there was something I was missing. But I remember in some of the teachings, it was said, I think, that some people stop at nirvana for a while, enjoy it, and then understand there's more to do.
Yeah, it's kind of, from the Mahayana point of view, there's a certain instability in nirvana in that you are, at some point you do become aware that others are still suffering, and you find that intolerable. So you have to do something about that, yeah. maybe next year, yeah. Any other questions or comments? Okay, let's see. I think that's most of the material that I wanted to cover tonight. Just to get back to this concept of ignorance, this is our mind projecting a lot of junk out there that doesn't exist. Okay, we're projecting permanent independent phenomena onto people, objects, emotions, memories, and they do not exist that way. And not only do we project it out there, but we believe in it. That's really where the suffering comes from. We believe in this hallucination or this junk that we're projecting out there. So the first step in eliminating ignorance is to stop believing in our junk. I mean, that's what, we've got a lot of experience believing it, yeah. Okay, when someone comes up and yells at me, you know, I believe this is an angry person, and that's who they are for all eternity, permanently independent. I don't see everything, both that person's karma and my own karma, that has gone into creating this experience of having this person yell at me. No, we just see permanent angry red-faced person in my face, okay, independently existing. And I just had the bad luck to have this lousy asshole in my life, you know. Without seeing that, in some degree, I have created that person. I have created the cause to experience that, okay. So we've got our junk. We believe in it. The first step is to stop believing in it, at least get a sense that we're seeing things that don't really exist, okay? And the next step is, if we don't believe it, we don't act in response to it. We don't use it as a basis for our actions, and that causes us to quit creating negative karma, okay? To stop, we don't produce any more suffering. And that leads us out of this cycle of samsara. And again, we'll talk about this more when we talk about the 12 links.
So it's easy to believe they talk about the snake on the path.
Yeah.
When you get closer, you can see that it's a rope.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can understand, okay. I believe that it's a snake.
Yes. And you acted like...
about they give the analogy that there's a snake in the road, mm-hmm. and you really believe it, and you're thinking, uh-oh. And you, as you get closer, you see it's a rope.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's really, I understand that. But
yeah.
the angry person one,
yeah.
not so much.
Yeah. We'll talk about that more when we talk about the 12 links. But, yeah, the first thing, the angry person is what's referred to as a dependent arising, okay? What's a dependent? All phenomena that we experience are dependent arisings, which means what? Anybody remember the three things that are characterized, that are characteristic of a dependent arising?
It has causes.
It's based on, it has parts, okay? It's this person, you know, with this face and these clothes and these words coming out of its mouth. It has, based on causes and conditions, you know, everything that's gone into creating that person's anger. And then it's dependent upon a designating consciousness, which means that I see this person and label them as an angry asshole, and as not as someone who's suffering for very valid reasons, you know, in the same way that I've suffered. It's experienced the same type of suffering. I mean, they're not inherent, there's no inherent quality of anger in that person that I can find if I look closely. Okay? There may be an impermanent, transient appearance of anger, but it gets very kind of woo-woo almost.
I'm starting with the snake.
Yeah. You see a snake on the road and you walk up closely to it, you and you respond to it as if it were a snake, and you walk up to it and you see it's just a rope.
And then you laugh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's what they say when you see the things are just illusions or imaginations. They say it's actually kind of it is kind of funny at times. Yeah. Yeah, all these great teachers, yeah. Okay. And so the first step in the practice is we still see the snake. It still appears to us as a snake, but we don't believe it, okay? We can say, it looks like a snake, but I know it's a rope because I just know it's a rope. That's the first step. The next step, the experience of a Buddha, is the Buddha doesn't even appear as a snake. Not only does he not believe in it, but he sees it accurately as a rope. Okay? The false impression doesn't even arise in the mind of a Buddha. An arhat will see the snake, but know right away that it's an illusion, that it's a mistaken view, okay? The arhat has not removed the karma that causes the false impression to arise in the mind. Okay? The Buddha has no karma that causes false impressions. The Buddha just sees the rope immediately. There's no delusion.
That sounds great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We see the snake and believe in it. The arhat sees the snake and doesn't believe in it. The Buddha sees the rope. Okay. So various levels of spiritual practice. Okay. So we're going around through life seeing a lot of snakes that aren't there. And we're responding to them. And we're letting they're telling us to jump, and we're saying, how high? Okay? We're just letting ourselves being led around by the nose by all these snakes. It's not a very nice image. Yeah. I don't know. It'd be easier to lead a snake around by the nose. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Okay. But just the things I want you to remember, the four truths, the definitions of samsara, and the main one being it's forced, uncontrolled. No, we don't have any choice. This is just being the plaything. You could almost say the victim of our karma, though it's not really a victim, okay, of uncontrolled rebirth with aggregates. And in this sense, the aggregates just refer to the body and mind that are designed that by their very nature experience suffering. Okay? So, to eliminate suffering, we have to get out of being forced to have a body and mind that experience suffering. Personal liberation, state of nirvana, which is a mental state, okay, that does not experience suffering, that still experiences pain and change, but does not have the mental experience of suffering in reaction to those. It's impossible to imagine, really, how we can have pain and not suffer. But we can, apparently. That's what we said. Oh. Hmm? Yeah. A parent would rush into a burning building to save their child and not experience the pain at that moment. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they're completely, you know, that's complete bodhicitta, you know, the wish to free others from suffering. Yeah, so we have little glimpses, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's do another meditation, unless there are more comments. We'll just do a review meditation on the Four Noble Truths. Just so we get really clear on this. Let me see if there's anything else I wanted to cover tonight. Yeah, I think we got everything there. Okay. Begin by checking your posture. Now take 3 deep breaths from the abdomen. And now take a moment and set your motivation. And now we're going to do what we call a review meditation, in which we just think in a very concentrated way about the chosen topic and make sure that we have it clear in our mind what we're talking about. And the topic is the Four Truths for a Noble Being. The Truths for an Arya, the most basic and all-encompassing of all the Buddha's teachings. The first truth is true suffering. Life is difficult, unsatisfactory, suffering. The 3 types of suffering are the suffering of suffering, pain, loss, deprivation, emotional distress, all the sufferings that we're familiar with on a regular basis in this lifetime. Then there's the suffering of change, how even experiences we label as happiness change over time and become less happy, even painful. There's nothing inherent in them that causes lasting happiness. Even though we go chasing after them, as if we just had more of this, more of that, or a better quality of this, then that would be happiness. But it's like drinking salt water to quench our thirst. And the third type of suffering, the most profound, the more difficult to see, is the suffering of pervasiveness. And that refers to this condition of being forced, without any choice, to be born with a body and mind that experience suffering over and over again. The cycle of samsaric rebirth, being born with aggregates of body and mind that by their nature experience suffering. The second truth is that of the true cause, that our suffering is not random, or even meaningless, we can say, that there is a cause for it. According to some teachings, it's karma and the mental delusions. But we could simplify that to really all the suffering comes from ignorance. Not seeing things as they truly exist, but seeing them in an imagined way that is really impossible. Things really couldn't exist the way we think they do, but we imagine they do, and we believe in it. It's like we believe in our hallucinations. We believe that the rope on the road is a snake. The third truth is true cessation. That it is possible to completely eliminate all suffering, to have an experience of that is completely free from suffering, permanently. No more suffering of body and mind. Not just that we can get a little bit better or cope or get by, but achieve a state of nirvana, complete freedom from suffering. That is a truth according to the Buddha. And then the last truth is the true path. If we go back to the cause, suffering is caused by ignorance, results from ignorance, then the path to freedom from suffering, obviously, is to eliminate ignorance. First, to stop believing in our projections, and then ultimately not to see the projections at all, but to see things as they really exist. Not to believe in our junk, but to see things as they are, ourself, our mind, and others. That is the path to the cessation of suffering. So just take a moment, review the four truths. Make sure you have them clear in your mind. Just repeat them to yourself a couple times so you have that down. And now you can take a moment and do a brief dedication. Any questions or comments? Yes. Mm-hmm. You want to pass it out? It's the homework. Thank you. So that's it for tonight. Next week we'll start going through the 12 links. On your way out, look at the Tanka by the door. Like I say, that's considered such an important teaching that's traditionally placed by the door in all Buddhist temples and centers in both Hinayana and Mahayana traditions. And remember, there are only three more classes in this module, so starting next week we'll have to move a little bit faster. Okay, so thank you, everyone.